We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And joining us for the very first time, a man who covered the Oklahoma City Thunder for 3 years as the beat writer for the Oklahoman, the current Warriors beat writer for the Bay Area News Group, and a man who has spent more time with Kevin Durant than anyone else currently covering Golden State, Mr. Anthony Slater. What's going on, Anthony?
How you guys doing?
We're doing all right, man. This seems to be like the endless offseason. It should be hell of short. The Warriors went all the way to the finals. It should be like a quick couple months, but my God, it seems like it's lasting forever.
I thought the Olympics, in some ways, kind of eased the window of time off because, you know, especially for a Warriors fan, you got three guys on one Olympic team. Two of them are like main cogs of the team. So, it's not that bad, man, especially with football getting going. I don't know how big a football fan you guys are, but I kind of honestly like the September month because right before I get really deep into the season, I get, you know, a month to kind of just watch sports instead of cover it.
I respect the hell out of that. Let's see. You've got way more patience than me. I'll start with the second question first. I am a huge football fan. I'm a big Raiders guy, but this year I'm all screwed up because supposedly they're moving to Vegas soon, so I have no idea how to deal with this year. And as far as the Olympics, you know, so generally speaking, the Olympics would have carried me through the offseason, right? But Warriors announced this signing of Kevin Durant, and now we've got to wait all these months before we get to see him in a Warriors jersey. It's like buying a Porsche and then not being allowed to drive it for hell of months. You know, like I'm just watching it in the garage, which is killing me.
Yeah, they teased you though with the they gave you a Warriors game at Oracle, and then you got to watch him in the Olympics be the best player in the world in the Olympics and know that he was a Warrior. Hear all the announcers talk about him being a Warrior. So, like I said, appetizer there. And as far as the Raiders go, if I were you, if you're a Raiders fan, I'd be rooting for them to have a really good year. Because to me, that's potential of them staying is if you can really get the fan base behind this team. Maybe the city kind of rallies behind it a little bit. Maybe you can keep them.
I love that. I love the optimistic angle. You'll find out through the course of this podcast that I'm way more neurotic and crazy. You know, like I, for example, love my wife. Yeah. If my wife came to me and said, look, we're good now, but in 2 years I'm leaving, I wouldn't be good for those 2 years. I just want her to leave now. You know, like I have no idea how to deal with this, but
what if it was, it may or may not happen. You'd fight for it.
No, that's true. That's true. But I tell you what, I won't jump down a Raiders rabbit hole. Instead, let me fire off some questions about your background, man, because I know our listeners are excited to have you in the Bay and want to know more about you. Let me start this way. You're originally from the Bay Area, right?
Yeah, North Bay. Roner Park, the city, Rancho Cucamonga, the high school. It's Sonoma County, right below Santa Rosa. That's probably the biggest town that's connected to Roner Park that people would know. But yes, I am originally from the Bay.
So did you grow up a Warriors fan?
No, I actually liked the Miami Heat growing up. It was kind of random. The Warriors weren't that good at the time. I just didn't really like, for some reason, growing up liking local teams. I didn't like them in any sports. So I, for some reason, picked the Miami Heat. I used to love Brian Grant, Tim Hardaway. Yeah. Eddie Jones was one of my favorite players. Alonzo Mourning. And then that morphed into Dwayne Wade in 2003 when they got him. And then that kind of carried me through high school was the Wade years. They won the title in 06 with him and Shaq. Those were kind of my teams. Now, I mean, you know, once you kind of get entrenched in the league, you don't really necessarily have a favorite team. You're just kind of bouncing around, covering it. You get to know guys that you like, but you also, you know, maybe you don't like other guys because of how they treat you. And to me, I'm just more of like a very interested observer of the league than a fan of any team.
That makes sense. And let me also give you another props for optimism. Saying that the Warriors weren't that good while you were growing up is like saying the ocean isn't that wet. I mean, we were awful under Cohan, man. So I definitely understand it. And also, what you don't know is you're speaking to Scotty. Scott grew up in D.C., but roots for like 18 different teams, has no loyalty to the local team. So, I mean, you guys are from the same book, kind of.
No, it's the opposite. All I'm about is the local teams. So, you know, when I'm in D.C., I root for the Wizards. If I'm out here, I'm rooting for the Warriors. I was born in Detroit, so I was a Pistons fan in 1989.
Anthony, I should have told you this before we went live. One of the goals of this show is for us to take as many shots at Scotty as we possibly can, man. So if you see some openings, just go ahead. You know what I mean? Throw as many punches as you want.
I'll let you take most of those shots before I meet him. You know, I never know how big he is. I don't know how good of a fighter he is. I don't
want to take any
bait. Blind shot.
You and I have never met. I'm sitting next to Scott. I think you could take him. I'll just put it out there. But, you know, again, we won't jump down that random topic. What led you out to Oklahoma City? How'd you end up out there?
So I went to Sonoma State, which is actually in Runner Park, for 2 years, and I was done kind of, you know, trying out my failed baseball career, and I wanted to stay in sports. My dad's a pretty good writer. I just kind of gravitated towards it, and, you know, it was funny. Bleacher Report, you guys remember, like, obviously everyone knows what Bleacher Report is now, but, like, in its infancy stage, it was just, like, you know, random people would kind of go on and, like, throw out whatever they want, you know, throw out 400 words or whatever, and people would comment on it, and it was kind of this novelty. At the early stages of Bleacher Report, I started doing that. I kind of, like, enjoyed that interaction, and I was like, you know, this would be fun to kind of try to, you know, make a career out of it. And that wasn't happening at Sonoma State. No football team, no interest in the sports programs. So I just, you've lived in a place 20 years, you kind of want to get out and experience something different. So I Googled, sports journalism programs, and a few popped up, but what really, really appealed to me about Oklahoma State University was it had a specifically sports media program where, you know, if you go there, you can, like, for example, one of my classes was sports announcing there. And it was, you go to the football game and you announce the game into, you know, like a record, like a Zoom kit. And then you go into class on Monday and with the football announcer, who's the teacher of the class, you listen to it and he critiques you. You know, what didn't you do right there on the play-by-play? How could you be better? That kind of stuff. Those were the kind of classes offered there. So I ended up choosing them over Penn State, and this was pre-Sandusky.
Yeah.
I got there. Bradley, I remember, was an option. But I'm always glad I picked Oklahoma State, not only because I come to love the state, but just because, you know, instead of going into that Sandusky saga, I instead went to Oklahoma State right when they exploded as a football program. Brandon Weeden, Justin Blackman. They went to the Fiesta Bowl and beat Andrew Luck.
Yeah, sure. No, I remember that entire thing, man. So is this actually a culmination for you? I mean, is this a dream job that you're doing, covering, being a professional sports writer and now covering basketball?
Yeah, and, it happened really quick as far as so I was at Oklahoma State for 2.5 years, and then I really latched on at the Oklahoman. There I interned twice, you know, both my summers. I finally graduated, and they kind of had me on as, like, full-time blogger, but I wanted to be a beat writer. I kind of wanted to get my career going. And right as I was looking elsewhere, they had a Thunder job open up, and I guess they really liked me. They put me in to cover the Thunder. This would have been the summer of 2013.
Okay.
So I've been covering the Thunder the last 3 years, and they have just been obviously a fascinating team to cover, especially, you know, 23 years old, 24, 25. As that to kind of be your first big beat out of college, it's kind of been crazy. And, you know, the first year they had this wild playoff run, you know, then they had the big injuries, and obviously everyone knows what happened last season. It's been kind of a whirlwind. Yeah, and now I'm back in the Bay Area to cover this Warrior season.
I won't even try to hide my jealousy, man. You know, I've got a view of being a beat writer is like this super sexy and fun job where you're like traveling in first class planes and watching, you know, NBA basketball from the front row.
First class.
Well, that's what I mean. So like, do you, now that you're there and you're doing it, do you love it as much as you thought? Is there downsides to this job just like any other job? I mean, what's been your experience?
You know, there are certainly downsides to this job, just like any other job. But I kind of have a more, I don't know, I guess cheery personality about things where I don't dwell on some of the negatives. I mean, that there is, like, yeah, we're not first class. If I'm in Oklahoma City, I'm not going direct anywhere. You know, I've had some, you know, travel issues, a ton of things, like horror stories I could lay out there. But as you kind of mentioned there, you know, I'm getting great seats to NBA games every night. I never feel like I'm pumped to go to work. I'm like, okay, game three of, like, West Semis tonight, you know, Spurs, Thunder, you know, Tim Duncan's in town. I'm going to get a good seat for that. I'm like, you know, I covered this past season. I mean, and it's just random events like this, like Tim Duncan's final NBA game I covered. It was in Oklahoma City. Kobe Bryant's final road game randomly was in Oklahoma City. The Thunder's final, the Kings, they just closed down Arco.
Yep.
The Thunder just happened to be there for the last game. And, like, you know, Brad Miller and Mike Bibby and all these people were back, and they threw this, like, party in Arco Arena, and I just happened to be covering the Thunder, so I was at that game. It's just, like, my job has afforded me all these like really unique situations to be in, and I just I love it for that. Even though, yeah, it does have some downsides that I don't even like dwelling on or talking about, because it's like, you know, like you said, any job has issues where it's dealing with management, or it's, you know, it's running into these people. That's just kind of like,
you're probably referring to Marcus Thompson and Tim Kawakami right now, right?
No way. I've only been working alongside them for about 2-3 weeks now, but they have been pretty easy to work with.
See, Anthony, that was an opportunity for you to take a shot at Scotty. Could have told him it was a terrible question or something. You know what I mean? No, it's up to you. Keep your heads up. How's it? Actually, let me ask it a different way. What led you to coming back out here? Were you following Durant specifically because you've built a relationship with him? Is this just a professional move that was coming anyways? What led to this?
You know, it's a combination of things. And, like, I'm not going to sit here and say Durant didn't have a heavy part to do with it. I wasn't looking to move. I really loved my job that I was at, and I really thought coming into, you know, if you take my mind right now back to late June, which is only, a couple months ago, I'm thinking I'm going to come back and cover the final chapter of a really unique sports story, which was this Thunder franchise dropped in the city that, you know, never had a pro team, and most people would argue was never going to get one, and then suddenly did because of Hurricane Katrina and the Hornets and that little test run. But that's a deep story in itself. But it was just it kind of finally felt like they were going to get over the hump. You know, they pushed the Warriors last season. They had a lot of young guys show up in the playoffs with Adams and Robertson and some of these guys, and it felt like if Durant came back, not that they for sure would have won the title. I mean, the Warriors probably still would have been the favorites. But there was a solid, like, it would have been a really fun season to cover. And if they were to get over the top, that was kind of where my mind was at. I didn't really think Durant was going to leave. I don't think many people did. I don't think the Warriors management really thought he was going to pull the trigger. I'm not even sure Kevin Durant thought he was going to. But everyone knows what kind of happened in early July. As that was going on, my sports editor at the Oklahoman left. So there was it was a little bit in flux there. Durant leaves, so the team I'm covering is in flux. And, you know, there was no assurity that Russell Westbrook was going to be there at the time. So, you know, I don't know what the Thunder are going to look like. And then at the same time, the Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News, comes after me. And it's like they want me to come cover this, basically the Chicago Bulls 1996 season. Because suddenly with Durant coming here, I mean, they're the biggest – if we listed the top four – stories in sports over the next 2-3 years. I mean,
oh, no doubt.
Warriors are definitely what, top four, but probably most would probably argue are number one, really.
They're the Beatles of basketball, man. They've stolen the offseason.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we started the first couple months talking about Cleveland, and the second Durant pulled the trigger, all of that changed, which I cannot tell you how happy it made me. You know, that I tell you what, I was thinking about this before we had you on, and I was really impressed with your unique experience with Kevin Durant. I mean, not only have you had the chance to watch pretty much every one of these guys' games in person, but you also have the personal experience of moving your professional life from Oklahoma City over here to the Bay. So I kind of want to explore all that, right? And let me start this way. I'm really fired up about having Durant join this team. I've been rooting for the Warriors 30 years. We never had any real big free agent acquisitions like this, at least not on this level. And I know that Durant is a top five player. But if I'm being honest with you, I don't know why. You know, all of my experience with Durant comes from highlights. It comes from reading his stats. It comes from watching him against the Warriors. But beyond that, I don't have any real knowledge. So let me ask this to start us off. What portion of KD's game is going to surprise us? What don't we know about the way he plays?
He's unbelievably, drilled offensively, and his moves are so smooth to the point that, like, I remember I was in Austin. Durant was doing this, shoe release thing. It was actually pretty recently. But and as part of it, Shaka Smart, the new Texas coach down there, wanted to show the media. And it was basically just like sneaker type reporters.
Sure. Great name, by the way, Shaka Smart.
Yeah, right. They had us on the court, basically I'm on one block and Kevin Durant's over on the mid post on the other part of the wing. And Shaka Smart was just having Durant on one of their team managers, on one of the Texas team managers, do you know, one dribble, 14-foot fadeaways. And, like, you won't believe the size. I mean, I know you hear he's 7 foot, but, like, till you see a 7 foot dude that can dribble and move like him and just has this offense, these offensive gifts, you won't believe it. And just, like, when I was up close, I mean, what Shaka Smart was having people do was have Kevin Durant three times from about 14 foot out mid-post do, like, one of his pet moves, which is, you know, the one dribble, like, kind of Dirk fadeaway.
Yeah.
And then he said, all right, media member, you know, he'd pick a random media member, come out on the same guy, try that move. And it was just, like, embarrassing to, like, see people even try to do these, like, fadeaways. And it just kind of had my eye trained on, well, that's just a normal person attempting this move. And then suddenly it was like, all right, Kevin, come back and do it again. And it was, this was like 7 foot lanky, you know, dude with an 8 foot wingspan with guard type hand. You know, he's not necessarily Steph Curry with the ball, but I mean, he is like an elite, you know, handler of the ball at times. I mean, yes, he's had his turnover issues, but I think that part of it, just how smoothly he scores, like, you know, some people argue maybe the most gifted scorer, like, ever in the history. Like, I've heard people say that. I mean, I don't know how if I want to make that statement, but just 7 foot and just some of the things he can do offensively. And that's not it. I mean, and the truth is that is what makes him unbelievable. But maybe you already knew that. Maybe what you'll come to learn is he's a better than you think defender, decent shot blocker. When he's engaged, and he isn't always, that was one of the issues with the Thunder last season, he can really be, like, he can be a great defender. The only thing that doesn't make him, like, all-defensive team type defender is that he doesn't always defend like he maybe did in that Warrior series where he's double-jumping and blocking Sean Livingston. He's just not always at that energy level. But when he is, I mean, he has the body and physical ability to just be an unbelievable defender, too.
What gets him to that point? Is it guys like Steven Adams or Westbrook getting on him, or is it just the fact that in the playoffs the games mean more to him? Like, I'm wondering if a guy like Draymond can consistently pump him up on just your average regular season game against the Bucks to actually play defense.
I think that's a problem that everyone battles, and, you know, I understand it. You know, you travel with these teams, and I'm pretty, you know, I can be pretty bored in the second quarter of a mid-January game in Milwaukee. So I just, like, it's stuff. I mean, that was kind of one of the issues. You know, the Warriors won 73 games last year, but their defense kind of took a step back, right? I mean,
huge step
back. That was kind of an issue. Yeah, it was kind of an issue through the season. And that's with guys like Draymond, who some nights you're like, man, he's not really bringing it much defensively. So I just kind of think it's natural. It's what these guys try to fight on a night-to-night basis. And it's, you know, when they're getting quoted after maybe three straight bad defensive games, that's what they're saying. You know, we got to lock in. We got to train our habits now, that type of stuff. It's stuff Kevin Durant knows. It's stuff that, you know, Westbrook had issues with, but also was, you know, getting on him about. I just think it's kind of natural with the NBA. What you saw, I thought, last season was when he did turn it on in the Spurs series against Kawhi Leonard and in the Warriors series, just overall with that switch in defense, was what he can be.
Of course.
When he's really locked in.
I don't think it's limited to just the NBA. What you're talking about is human tendencies, right? All of us in every one of our jobs, everyone listening, if there's anybody out there who gives 1,000% every minute of the day, I've never met them. You know, I spend at least 40 minutes I probably spend at least 3 hours of my day surfing around online for no damn reason. You know what I mean? And I take my job hell of serious. So it makes sense that he wouldn't give it every play.
The funny thing is, a guy like Russell Westbrook, that's one of, like, the biggest, I guess, compliments people give him, is that, like, nobody has energy like Russell Westbrook has energy. But the truth is, that's really just offensive energy with Russell, because he kind of can lollygag on defense too. A lot of these guys do. And it's just the sport that they play. Like, it's so redundant, you know, these 82 games, and it's just like a lot of these games mid-season, there's not much at stake.
Sure.
Especially when you're not chasing, like, a 73 type win. If it's just like a race, you know, next year I think it's going to be a bit different with the Warriors, because they're going to go into these road environments and the crowds are going to be crazy, because this is the biggest game of the year for these teams. But if it's just the Pelicans against the, you know, Hornets, and it's, you know, a whatever game against a couple whatever teams, like, you can't expect guys to just be locked in at all times. It's just like, it's like preseason football. Like, is anyone trying to watch these like third quarter?
No, right. Hell no.
Preseason.
Exactly. Yeah. And here, let me give you two joined questions. First one, you've mentioned it a couple of times. I just want to make sure. I feel like there are more rumors about Kevin Durant's height than there is like about like the Loch Ness Monster. Like, we hear that he's listed at like 6'9". You hear announcers say that he's generally over 7 feet. You look at the photos from the Olympic team and it looks like he's taller than DeMarcus. How tall is this guy? You know, I'm sure that you haven't actually measured him, but how tall is he?
He's 6'11". He's 6'11", and he's like inching. He's close to 7 foot. I bet if I had to guess and I like legitimately took a tape measure out, it would probably be like 6'11½", which is monstrous for a guy with two guard skills. He says 6'9". He's always had himself listed as 6'9" because he's a little weird about stuff. He thinks it sounds cooler for a wing to be 6'9". when he grew up, listening, you know, hearing about like James Worthy, you know, some of those guys, he doesn't want people to think, oh, he's a center. Like, that's just like, and he had that listing like year one, and he just never has left it. I'm interested, new team, new media guy, new everything. Maybe he just admits to 6'11". Because he actually admitted it last year, like on the record for the first time. And then he jokes, sometimes he tells girls he's 7 foot, even though he's 6'9".
Is the wingspan 7'4"? Because I've also heard that number thrown out.
Yeah, it's right around that. I mean, you know, I feel like if you're a long player in the NBA, your wingspan kind of has to be a bit taller than your height. And yeah, he has. His wingspan is taller than my height. I don't know for sure. That one to me is a lot harder to eye test.
Sure.
Because, you know, that's...
Because he's not walking around with his hands spread out.
Well, that plus with height, you can see, okay, he's standing next to Enes Kanter. Like, oh, he's taller than Enes Kanter. And Enes Kanter's listed at like 6'10", and he's a legit 6'10". So you can kind of measure it up again. Whereas, as you said, not all the guys just walk around next to each other with their arms spread out.
Tell me about this guy's personality, which I know nothing about, and let me kind of guide the conversation and start this way. You mentioned that this year's games is going to be a little bit different, and I think you hit the nail on the head for a lot of reasons. Not only are the Warriors going to be remarkably popular, you know, the Beatles of basketball, they're also going to be the villains of the league. You know, they're going to be the Darth Vader of basketball as well. And we've already kind of seen some of the hatred focused at Durant, right? In one of those warm-up games at Staples, he got booed. There's people on the Warriors who will love that. Andre Iguodala will embrace that. Draymond will embrace it. I think Steph kind of got used to it. How will Durant, in your opinion, deal with that stuff? Does he care whether or not, you know, people outside of Golden State hate him? Is that a motivation? How do you see that plan?
I think he, more than like, I don't know, I think people talk about, like the hate. I don't know if like him getting booed a lot is going to bother him. I don't think he likes is when people either say he's not one of the better players in the game or you know, he kind of thought the last couple of years that people had forgot about him a bit, even though obviously everyone knew who Kevin Durant was, but just he had the 2014 MVP season, and then he has the MVP speech that, you know, everyone remembers. He's kind of at the height of basketball. A lot of people might have argued he was maybe even overtaking LeBron.
Sure.
But then he came into they went out in the West Finals that year kind of disappointingly, and then they the next year he gets the foot injuries, and you know, it ends up really taking his whole season, three surgeries. And as he's missing 55 games, Stephen Curry and the Warriors suddenly just explode onto the sports scene with, you know, it really came from nowhere. Like, people knew they were good, but I mean, you guys as Warriors fans watching Steph Curry grow up, you never even thought this was possible,
no.
I would assume.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And especially those of us who stretched all the way back under Kohan, all of this continues to seem surreal, man. Like, none of this seems real. If I woke up tomorrow and they were still like a 20-win team, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, like, this does seem unbelievable.
Yeah, so where I'm going with this is that I think, like, he watches first take. Like, this is, like, he's very aware of what everyone's saying, reading about him. You know, he'll talk to me about stories I've written, and, I'm just writing for the local paper. And so he's very aware of like the opinions out there about him. And I think that type of stuff bothers him. I think people like Stephen A. Smith or Charles Barkley or Reggie Miller going on after he made his free agency decision. And I think Reggie Miller said he wasted his legacy to chase cheap jewelry, you know, quotes like that, I think bother him. But I don't think that the, like booing from fans will really bother him much. I mean, because I think if he's just really good next year, and like people are booing him, but he's still like averaging 35, and people are going, well, you know what? He may have gone to the 73-1 Warriors, but man, he might be the best player on the 73-1 right. Warriors, and he's leading them, and they're winning the title like everyone thinks they are. I think he'll be fine with the narrative around him because it'll be like, you know, these guys may not like him, but this guy is unbelievable. It'll kind of he's going to be the story of the league, and just kind of like what he did in the Olympics. I mean, people were kind of talking crap about him for a few weeks, but then once he started getting going in the Olympics, everyone's like, well, you know, at least for a few days, it's like, man, this guy's just really good. Like, I don't know how much you guys watch the games, but
I know, and he seemingly had a statement game. It's just like what you're saying. It seemed like it bothered him at first, all this outside perception, and then when I think it was right before the gold medal game, I read something about Coach K coming to him and saying, look, where the hell is the Kevin Durant that I know? And next thing we know, he comes out there and puts up 35, including like six three-point daggers from like 45 feet out. You know, he just needed that little reminder of how damn good he is.
Yeah, and then the conversation on Twitter or wherever he's reading it is not, hey, look at this dumb free agency movie made. Look at this, look at that. It's like, hey, wow, we forgot how good this guy is. Let's write about how good he is as a basketball player, which I think – he's confident enough to know that if he just plays really well this season, you know, he can kind of dictate that portion of the conversation. The stuff that'll bother him, I think, is, you know, the first takes, the Reggie Millers, the Barclays of the world commenting that some of the stuff that they've really already said.
Yeah, well, those guys bother me, so I can definitely associate with that. How do you think he'll deal with sharing the ball? Because obviously in Oklahoma, you know, he had Russell Westbrook to contend with at times, but now he's got Clay, Steph, Draymond, teamed up with three other All-Stars, and we're talking about Durant, a guy who won scoring titles. Is he going to have trouble sharing the ball? Is that going to get him annoyed or pissed off?
No, because, I mean, he's like a super efficient player. You know, he's in the 50-40-90 club, which is like, you know, I think Curry's in it, and there's only about six, seven players ever who are in it. He's an efficient player. He's a good passer. And he's not – he cares about his stats, and I think there will be times this season where, you know, maybe he's a little bit bothered by it. But he always kind of seems to rein himself in from that. You know, he doesn't let that seep in where if he's – you know, he might be mad for an hour, but then he'll kind of come back to reality and understand it. And he knows the move he made. You know, it's not like he came here thinking he was going to come and get all the isolation basketball that he got in Oklahoma City. Like, he knows what he's coming to. So – like I said, I think there'll be frustrating times, but I don't think it'll be a season of frustration about maybe just because his shots have diminished like three or four per game. And then the other thing is, you know, I think he is going to get more isolations than people realize. People act like the Warriors, it's just like absolute, okay, tip off to final buzzer. It's just swing, 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 you know, three. Like, it's incredible ball movement. The truth is, there's isolations throughout the game. It's not as much as maybe watching the Thunder play, but you know, how many times is Curry just, like, doing a dribbling exhibition and then firing up a long three? A lot of times he'll hit it, and it's awesome, and it creates a great highlight. But Durant's going to get his maybe three or four mid-post touches per game where he gets in his pet spots and he gets his move. And the Warriors are going to give him that because they want to keep him happy and because he's really good at it, too. I mean, it's not a bad play.
No, and they need it. I mean, anyone who watched the end of the finals last year, man, specifically the end of Game 7, you know, what became unfortunately obvious is that either because of Steph's health or because of the way our offense worked, whatever it was, when we very much needed one basket in the final 3 minutes, we didn't have one guy we could give the ball to and then just get the hell out of the way. That's exactly what Durant brings to this team, and I'm fired up to watch. Let me ask you this. Scotty and I have done a lot of speculation, and what the idea has been is that, look, good things come out of bad things, and the only reason that Durant ended up as a Warriors is because the Warriors, in fact, lost that Game 7. Let me ask you, do you think that's true? If the Warriors win Game 7, they celebrated a championship in the offseason, does Durant still sign here, or is he in Oklahoma City right now?
I think he's still in Oklahoma City because I do think it was a very close race between them at the final buzzer. I think he's happy that the Warriors lost, and he's happy that he was able to make this move, but I think he just would have feared the backlash even more if it was he was going to not only to the two-time MVP, but the two-time defending champs. So I do think that would have pushed him to re-sign for 1 year in Oklahoma City, because that's the truth. He had this out where he didn't have to, like, long-term commit to Oklahoma City.
Yep.
He could have just gone back lined up his free agency with Russell Westbrook, took one more shot at the Warriors, who would have been two-time defending champs, and tried to knock him off. That, to be honest, is like, I'm still surprised he didn't try that one more time,
sure,
even with the Warriors losing. But, you know, this kind of gave him, I think, more of an out to say. And to me, to be honest, I think it gave the Warriors a better recruiting pitch to come in, and instead of saying, hey, you need us so you can get a ring, it was like, hey, see, look, we just lost. We need you to get back to
sure.
the top.
No, of course, man. There's been, you know, even though we've had a lot of success, Warriors fans still have a little Chicken Little in them. And the Chicken Little, when it comes to Kevin Durant, is that the contract he signed, although it's a couple of years, he's got an out after next year. If you had to guess, you know, are we going to see Kevin Durant in a Golden State uniform for the foreseeable future, or do you think there's a chance he leaves after 1 year?
Oh, and I'm guessing. I'm definitely thinking he's, and I think he wants to at this moment, lock in long term, and, you know, be here for the next 4, 5, 6, 7, however many years. I think like this, I think the Warriors are the only thing on his mind right now. But I also just covered me thinking that in Oklahoma City that he wanted to stay there long term. And then crazy stuff happens. You know, Brian Windhorst, the ESPN guy, he's big about not wanting to talk or speculate on free agents until July 1st because so much stuff can happen before July 1st. You know, I'm just thinking about this last case with Durant. Throughout the year, the Thunder had a really disappointing regular season last year where it was like, man, he really probably is going to leave just because it's, you know, it's going so poorly. But then they come back and beat the Spurs. And then they're up 3-1 on the Warriors. And you're like, why would he leave this? They're about to win the title.
Yep.
And then they lose that. And so if one of those games goes differently, Kevin Durant just plays better in Game 6 against the Warriors, he's probably still on the Thunder because yep. he was not good in that closeout game. Or, as we were just talking about, if the Warriors win it all. So, you know, if things go well with Curry this year, if I don't know. If I had to guess, I would put a high percentage that, yes, he's here in Golden State beyond next season and probably years down the road. But who knows? You know, I don't know if injuries are going to be a problem, if for some reason he, you know, battles with the front office or whatever. It would seem like this is a situation with his personality and with the Warriors franchise and their reputation and personality that it's going to be a good fit. They're probably going to win a crazy amount of games this year. And then him and Curry are going to resign, and they're going to be probably going for a second title the year after. But I just, you never know.
This may be shocking, but I now really like you, Anthony. Phenomenal answer. You know, I'm all fired up for it. I tell you what, I want to get some quick predictions for you on next year's Warriors. And here's how we do it on our show. I happen to be a degenerate gambler. Because of that, I love the concept of over-unders. So what I want to do is give you some subjects, give you a number for that subject, and then you tell me whether or not you think next year it'll be over and under. Let me start this way. Points per game for Kevin Durant next year. I put the over-under at 25. What do you take?
I'm going to go over. I really think early on, and by early on, I mean like maybe even the first month and a half, 2 months, they're going to, like, the Warriors are going to consciously try to feed him.
Yep.
And say, you know, say, look, like, you don't worry. You could take even, and I don't even just mean on the court. I mean, like, even in huddles, like, hey, man, take your shot. Like, we're coming to you this
sure.
play.
Sure, work him into
because
it.
Because I think two reasons. Number one, you just want to get him as quickly as possible, like, you know, feeling good about himself, feeling good about his standing within the team. And then number two, as we were talking about earlier, he is only on technically really a one-year deal. So you want to keep him happy as much as you can without, you know, compromising team concepts within it. So I think he's going to average. He so easily can get to 20. I think right now, currently, he's on a streak of 65 straight games of 20 or more, which is like the most since Kobe in like 06 or something like that.
Huh.
And he's still on it. You know, it's going to be a little bit, and I don't even mean he's going to be chasing that. I just mean that's like, because it's not like he was, you know, in game 30, like, oh, I need to get 20 tonight. He just easily gets 20. That's just how he is within an NBA game. So, I mean, it's going to be a little bit different because I think his shots are going to be down. They're going to blow more teams out, which means he'll sit more fourths. But I bet he's sitting around 27 per game. And it won't be like, oh, man, he's really needing a lot of shots to get to these 27. He just kind of does it.
How about wins on the year? I put the over-under at 69. What do you take?
I'm going to go under. You know, a lot of people are talking 70-plus. I'm thinking like 66-ish.
Yeah. Because they don't care about the win title. They want the championship, right?
Well, no. I mean, for many reasons, including like, look, it's a lot sexier to chase the Jordan Bulls than it is to chase yourself, right? I mean, there's not an appeal as much to go after your own record. And then, you know, some of these wild wins that they got last year, like the, remember the one in Oklahoma City where Curry just hit the 40-footer?
You mean my favorite game of all time? Yes, I happen to remember that. It was amazing.
Yeah.
You still sound a little bitter about it, Anthony. You got to switch over on that, man. You're a Warriors guy now. You should be all fired up about that game.
I am not bitter about that game. That was one of the, because, you know, the Thunder gives us incredible media seats. They're one of the, probably the top three media seats in the league, which means we're courtside. And that thing happened like 4 feet in front of me where Curry pulled up from. And it's like etched in my mind.
That little dance he did afterwards too. Yeah.
I didn't even see the dance live because I was like, I think I might have blacked out temporarily because that and then the Klay Thompson game six, which I was in the exact same seat for, is just two of the most unbelievable sporting feats I've seen. But what were we talking about?
You gave it to me.
I was thinking about the game.
It was wins on the year. You said it was going to be under 69. I agree with you. Yeah. Let me refocus this.
But is that a number one seed in the West, do you think?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, think about it. What did they win the year before? 67? And yes. How easily were they the one seed?
Well, and they disabled one of their major opponents. I mean, not only did they add Kevin Durant, they took Kevin Durant away from the Thunder. You know, I mean,
We
got to see
who
how Pau Gasol.
Yeah.
Who are gonna? I mean, I agree with you. I think they will be the one seed. But I cut you off. What were you gonna say?
Oh yeah, look, I'd guess Spurs around 60-ish wins and Clippers maybe 56-ish. But yeah, I mean, something like 66, I think would be. You know, they'd probably be able to sit their last couple games because they'd already locked up the one.
Last one, at least last over-under before I get to my favorite subject, the whole story time with Uncle Anthony. But here's my last over-under. Golden State Warriors World Championships with Durant on the team. I put the over-under at 1.5. What do you take?
Over. I think it'll be here for a batch of years, 4 or 5-ish, at least. You know, I don't know. Not that I want to put that down in writing, but I think they'll win 2 out of the next 3. Just like, you know, LeBron, when he went to Miami, they won 2 out of the first 3. So I'm going to guess they're going to get at least 2 with him here.
Awesome. And just like I promised, let's transition, man. I will assume you haven't listened to every one of our episodes since you just came over here, but one of the favorite things we like to do with a segment called Storytime is we take advantage of your experience with these guys, your unique perspective. I'm going to give you a player. If you wouldn't mind, give me a story. Let me start with the obvious, Kevin Durant.
I got to rack my brain here. Covered him for 3 years. I sat with him in the Memphis locker room. It was last year for he tweaked his hamstring in Washington last year. It was early in the season, and he was out for about 6 games. One of those games was in Memphis. And about a week later, he was getting in. A week after the Memphis game, he was going to get inducted into the Oklahoma Hall of Fame, which in itself was, you know, it's kind of a weird event thinking back on now because it wasn't even the Sports Hall of Fame. But anyway, and Russell Westbrook was the one introducing him into it and was like speaking about Kevin Durant before. And so to advance that, I was doing a story on him and Russ and their relationship, which is complicated, and it's got a lot more complicated now.
Sure.
And he gave me about, you know, 25 minutes in the pregame locker room. You know, he just did some like court work to test his hammy. He wasn't playing that night, but you know, his team ran out to the court, and you know, he let me sit in the locker room for about 25 minutes and sit there and chat with him. And he really opened up about his relationship with Russell Westbrook. It actually created for a really interesting Q&A that has become a really interesting read now that they've kind of had the sour end to an 8-year partnership. But I just, for him to, I think, let me in that space at that time, which was kind of a rare time. I just kind of remember sitting with him in there. And I remember they had a nice spread of food in the locker room in Memphis, and but he had ordered out, and like some delivery kid from some local like place with wings and fries walked in with like a bag of wings and stuff for him. He gave him like a freaking $30 tip, and I was sitting there like, man, this is some, you know, he had like great looking food spread out in the locker room, but he just wanted these wings. And I remember it was just kind of a unique thing, and I remember the kid walking in and being like, you know, you could tell he knew where he was going. He knew he'd been called to the FedEx Forum to deliver wings to Kevin Durant. And he was like just absolutely stunned by the moment. Now, I mean, the fact that he's walking in like the tunnel of an arena, he knows where he's going. He knows who he's about to deliver to. Then the locker room opens and he goes and hands it to Kevin Durant. I was like giving him $30. And it was like middle of the interview. I don't know. That's just kind of something that sticks out. I got plenty of different ones. I just sometimes I've got to think more deeply than I am.
I am hoping that we can get you on fairly regularly. So this won't be the only time I ask you. We'll get another one. And I know we're running long. I know you don't have time for this. And I know Scott's going to punch me in the face for making him edit all this time. But I have to ask you, man, Steven Adams is one of the most fascinating players I have ever watched. I'm terrified of him, to be honest. I feel like if me and like my 10 closest friends tried to fight him, he could beat all of us back. Any stories on his toughness or who the hell Steven Adams is?
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable human. I have hundreds of stories on this guy, but I mean, do you know about his background at all? It's fascinating.
I read that thing from ESPN, the New Zealand, and started like way off in the sticks and didn't play basketball after super late. So I know a little bit about it.
Yeah. From New Zealand, I had 18 siblings, all from the same dad, who's like this 7-foot dude from like Britain, named Sid, but, staked himself in New Zealand. All the kids are all the boys are 6'9" or above. His sister just won her third Olympic medal in shot put. Yeah, she's like a shot put like legend. She's like the Babe Ruth of shot put, but he's about as quirky as it comes. And like, what's awesome about him is like, he truly like before he got here, he didn't know anything about the NBA. I remember like his first year, like he didn't even really know who Dwight Howard was. Like, we were asking questions, like, oh, is that? And one of my favorite, oblivious, but like it kind of was, is what made him good in a sense. Adams moments was his first preseason when they were playing the Bulls. It was in Wichita, Kansas, and. Like I said, this is preseason rookie year. And he was walking out to the court with Durant after a timeout, and Mike Dunleavy and Joakim Noah are on the Bulls. And Steven Adams goes over to cover Mike Dunleavy because, you know, he's about the same height as Joakim Noah.
Sure.
And he just didn't know who was the center. He doesn't know that Noah's the center. It's his first, you know, rookie preseason. And Durant has to go over and be like, hey, Steven, you got to get Noah. That's the center. I got Dunleavy.
And that's got to be the only time on earth anybody ever mistake Joakim Noah for Mike Dunleavy Jr. You know what I mean? Like, that's a random mistake to make.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't even just that. I think it was just him saying, oh, that guy's tall. Maybe he's the center. Because, I mean, Mike Dunleavy's really tall for a wing. And I just remember that, and it was funny. And so many other moments. His ability to, like, block out pain is unbelievable. Like, I've seen him, like, badly sprain his ankle, and you can almost see him in his mind, like, it doesn't hurt, Steven. Stop it. Like, this is not hurting you. And then he just, like, forces himself to be okay. That's crazy. And he's funny. He's unbelievably, like, witty with his New Zealand stuff. He's honestly that one of the saddest parts of me leaving Oklahoma City is I won't get to cover that guy who provided just absolute, quote, gold and is becoming an unbelievable player. I was really kind of excited to cover his career progression because I think he's going to be a really good player.
We got just a small taste of everything you were just saying in the Western Conference Finals last year. I mean, I don't remember which hand it was, but I remember one of his hand being hurt. They'd had a close-up where they showed his entire right arm, let's say it was the right side, literally vibrating with pain. Then he gets the ball and hits two free throws, zero problem, and we didn't see him have any limitations with that hand injury going forward. So, no, that guy is a savage, man. And
about 2 weeks before that, on the last play or on the last game of the Spurs series, game 6, when they clinched it at home, it was Tim, and this is what I was talking about earlier, Tim Duncan's last game ever.
Yeah.
And Adams had a double-double. He dominated, and word came out that I found out pregame he had a huge migraine heading. He's been getting migraines since he was 14. He was thrown up. He needed IVs pregame, and then he looked terrible in pregame warm-ups. And then he just comes out under bright lights, having had a migraine about an hour earlier, sends the greatest power forward ever to retirement with like a double-double.
Yeah, he's a gamer, man. That guy's a savage. Great stories. Anthony, thank you so much, man. I know you got a lot of things going on in your life, making the transition, you know, dealing with the offseason, all the above. And we really appreciate you lending us some of your time. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
For those of you who are looking for more stuff from Anthony Slater, he's going to be writing for the Bay Area News Group, as we mentioned up front. He also already has his own Warriors podcast. Obviously, it kills me to let you guys know that, but it's so damn good, it would be selfish not to tell you. He's hosting a podcast named All 82, which is on iTunes, if you guys want to check it out. Needless to say, we love doing this every week. Certainly true this week. If you guys want to reach out to us for any reason, you know where to find us. Our email account remains warriorshuddle@gmail.com. We're up on Twitter at Warriors Huddle. We're on a bunch of podcasting services, including iTunes, where we really appreciate your reviews. And we are finalizing our contestant list for the upcoming game show. Are you smarter than a game, or are you smarter than a bandwagon fan, rather? I'm really excited about it. We're getting a phenomenal response. If you guys out there would like to be a contestant, please send me your interest to warriorshuddle@gmail.com. We'll take it from there. Huge fun, you guys. Hopefully, we'll see you next week.
Good, good.